At least 58 people now dead, more than 500 people wounded.
17 fires burning right now in the state, 5,700 structures destroyed, at least 35 people dead.
I mean, this was a massive church just outside of San Juan with a congregation of 3,000 people. Maria just shredded this building.
ISIS released a new video today showing the execution of 21 Coptic Christians kidnapped in Libya.
Two suicide bombings killed more than 40 people on one of the holiest days on the Christian calendar.
North Korea fires yet another missile, but Pyongyang claims this one will be able to hit the U.S. mainland, striking cities like Los Angeles, Denver, even New York and Boston.
They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen.
The world seems so unstable, so insecure. Everything is changing way too fast. But there are some things that are steadfast, things that never change: God and His Word. Randy Reams is pastor of Kindred Bible Church in Nampa, Idaho. Join Pastor Randy now as he shares truths from God's unchanging Word.
chapter 6. And then we're going to go to chapter 7. All right. We'll do verse 12. And then we'll jump down to 15 and keep going from there. So you just put your fingers in there. Open up 6, have your finger over the next page if it's for you in chapter 7, okay? So Judges chapter 6, verses 33 through 35, and then chapter 7, verse 12, then 15 through 22. Now all the Midianites and the Amalekites and the people of the east came together, and they crossed the Jordan and encamped in the valley of Jezreel. But the Spirit of the Lord clothed Gideon, and he sounded a trumpet, okay? And the Abizzites were called out to follow him, and he sent messengers throughout Manasseh, and they too were called out to follow him. And the messengers to Asher, to Zebulun, to Naphtali, and they all went out to meet him. We know that number to be 32,000. You'll see why. Then our story is the fleece we talked about last week. Now verse 12 of chapter 7. And the Midianites and the Amalekites and all the people of the east lay along the valley like locusts in abundance. Their camels were without number, as the sand of the seashore in abundance. We'll jump to verse 15. As soon as Gideon heard... Oh man, I jumped way too far. Let's jump down to verse 16. That'll be easier. And he divided the men into 300 in three companies. That would be 100 each. I don't know if you're good at math. All right. And put trumpets in their hands. And all of them had empty jars and torches inside the jars. And he said to them, "Look at me." Boy, if you really know how we started this story, you understand that statement alone has powerful meaning. "Look at me. And do likewise. When I come to the outskirts of the camp, do as I do. When I blow the trumpet, I and all that are with me, then blow the trumpets also on every side, all of the camp, and then shout for the Lord and for Gideon." Boy, he's prideful, right? No. Anyway, "Gideon and the 100 who were with him came to the outskirts of the camp, beginning at the middle watch," that's midnight. "When they had just set the watch, they blew the trumpets and smashed the jars that were in their hands. And the three companies blew their trumpets and broke their jars. And they held in their left hands the torches, and in their right hands the trumpets to blow. And they cried out, 'A sword for the Lord and for Gideon.' Every man stood in his place around the camp, and all the army, that is the Midianites, ran. And they cried out and fled. And then when they blew the 300 trumpets, the Lord set every man's sword, that is the Midianites, against his comrade and against all the army. And the army fled as far as Beth Shittah toward Zerah," if I get those right, "as far as the border of by Tabeth." You may be seated. You know, I actually practice those and listen to those before, but I never can get them when I'm here. So you got to just quick review what we've learned so far. We learned that the Israelites have been oppressed by the Midianites for 7 years, but God loves us too much to leave us in our sin. God comes along the scene, sends a prophet, if we recall, to speak to them about their idol worship. And then we have this story where Gideon is doing what? The beginning of the story, we meet Gideon. Yeah, he's hiding, he's threshing wheat down in the ground, all right, in a wine press. This is why it's big. He says, now look at me. What was he doing at the beginning? Don't look at me, man. I'm hiding. So there's a change in the person there. And so we learn that God will use the weak because Gideon talks about his family being the least and the smallest and that kind of thing. All right. Then we learn that the battle is spiritual because he says, here's what I want you to do, to go take on the Midianites. But before you do, you got to go take down the idols, right? The Asherah pole and the altar that was there to Baal on his father's land. So we learn, where does that spiritual battle start? At home. And then along the way, Gideon had tested the Lord in a sense of keep asking him for proof. And then we get to the whole fleece story, which we talked about last time. Okay. And we talked about the different types of biblical, the way that God speaks, the Bible speaks of God's will, the sovereign will, the revealed will, and the dispositional will of the Lord. But through that we learned is God's patient. He didn't zap Gideon because Gideon kept asking for a surety. He understands that faith for us weak folks is a process. And that brings us to our story now. So we learned in this story, we're watching a video for one, but he sent out these messengers throughout Naphtali and these places, okay, for soldiers to come, and he gets 32,000 of them. That's not bad, considering he's staying in that one area of Israel. But we also learned that however many of the Midianites are, they describe them as bugs on the ground, locust. Just them and their camels. Like I said, scholars, I don't know how they come up with that number, but scholars come up with a number about 130,000 to 135,000. So if I've got 32,000 and they've got 135, I'm outnumbered. I may not be the brightest math fellow around, but I'm pretty sure I'm outnumbered. And God says, that's too many. Seriously, God, are you sure about this? Where do you get the, do you do math different up there in heaven than we do down here? We're outnumbered 10 to 1. So God instructs Gideon, all right, and this is in verse 3 of chapter 7. Those of you that are afraid or fearful, go home. Well, to me, that's sort of a stupid question. You're getting ready to go into battle. Who isn't fearful? But it says fearful and trembling. So it's not just, I mean, if you're a smart person, if you're going into battle, you've got some fear going on there. But some of them had enough fear where they turned around and went home. And we learned from the story, that's 22,000 guys go home. All right? So God turns and looks at Gideon and go on, that's great. Now, what kills me is, did God not know how many were going to leave? No, he knew. Why does he go through this process? Why does he go through this process? Yeah, to take Gideon on a journey, okay? And he says, you know what? 10,000? 135,000. 10,000? You still got too many. I'm sorry, God, but again, I'm not. How is 10,000 too many? Okay. Now outnumbered if I got this right, was it? 35 to 1 or whatever it is, I don't know. I haven't took the time to think about that. All right? And he's going, wait, you got too many. Well, what else am I supposed to do? Take them down to the water, and I'll test them for you. I don't know about you, but I ask God, wait a minute, I didn't ask them to be tested. Listen, that's what he says. God says, I will test them for you. But I wasn't asking for that. Don't tell me God's never taken you a place you didn't ask for. No, God, I was praying this way, and I got this. Again, he could have just from the get-go made him drink at the water, down the water, I guess, and had the same results, I guess, right? But he's taken them on this journey. Being a pastor, when they say take him down the water, you're going, what, are you going to baptize him? That's what you tend to think. And so So he takes them down to the water, and you saw the video where there are those who cup. And people analyze this all the time. The guys that cupped were more awake and aware, so they were going to. I don't think so. I just think God says, send them down there. I know this is going to be the number. And that's the number I'm looking for, being sovereign and omniscient at all. And then, so when the men, I'm down at verse 7, with the three mended men who lapped, I will save you and give you the Midianites. At this point, you only got 300, you need saved. You had 32,000, maybe not, but when you got 300, Gideon, you need saved. You're not the savior of Israel now, you need saved. Okay? There's a difference. And I want you to think about okay, so Gideon, you started, you got a good 32,000 crowd. All right, all the cowards go home, I'm down to 10,000. All right, guys, let's go down and drink by the river, down to 300. What speech do you give 300 guys to make them want to go fight? What do you say? I mean, you know, coaching football for years, you know, I don't think I ever faced odds like that. So you can come up with some kind of a motivational speech, you know. You know, you could take my life, but you can't take my freedom. Anybody know that? Yeah, Braveheart, you know, that whole, I don't recommend the movie, but that kind of big speech, what do you tell them? You're going to get a medal, posthumously. I mean, really, that, yeah, your name, yeah, they're going to honor you, they're going to remember you, you're going to be dead, but they're going to remember you. What speech do you give 300 guys to take on 130,000 men? Do you know what I'm saying? I can't imagine being in that spot. You got to convince these guys that you're going to go take on the Midian army. Yeah, and I'm, you know, if I'm one of them, I'd be going, "Who are you talking to? Did you notice that 9,700 that just left and the 22,000 before that? Did you just notice that?" So they sort of bed down, if you will, for the night, and we get this. The Lord comes to him in verse 9. "Arise and go down against the camp of the Midianites, for I have given them into your hand." Okay, God, now listen to his statement now. If you're afraid. He didn't say, if you're afraid when you had 32,000. He didn't say, if you're afraid when you had 10,000. But now, what do you mean, if I'm afraid? God's saying this because he knows at this point, wait a minute, God, you took me on this journey, okay, where I brought an offering to you and you touched the stick with it and you set it on fire and it was consumed. You took me through this process to build my courage and I end up sneaking out at night to tear down the altar and the Asher pole and the family wants to kill me. And I give a call and I get 32,000, but I'm still not sure. And I get the flea. I'm finally to the point where I feel okay about this, and you whittle me down to 300, now I'm afraid. Before, I think he just lacked faith before. But God, through all these tests, builds his faith up, but now in his mind, in the natural, there's nothing wrong with being afraid, folks. Gideon is just observing the circumstances, right? I read a sermon this week for school from Dietrich Bonhoeffer, a pastor in Germany, through the 30s, through the war, gets killed just a few months before the war ends by Adolf Hitler, has him killed. But his whole sermon's on fear. You want to be afraid? I should have brought the sermon, I'll read some of it to you. But man, he's speaking to people to watch their country at this point, 1938. Hitler, the brown shirts, you guys know what the brown shirts were. You know, so they've killed people, they've attacked Jews, anybody that was politically against Hitler just sort of kind of disappear, okay? The people are running with fear. It wasn't wrong to be fearful in Nazi Germany in 1938. You could just look around. And so I'm not blaming Gideon here for being afraid because he still lives in flesh and bone and he can count. God says, if you're afraid... So what does God say to a guy that's afraid? Be of great courage. Here I am. I'm with you. No. Take your buddy and go down into the camp. How's this going to help? I'm serious. I know I could stand up the hill. I've already seen how many there are. And it takes his aid with him. And this aid means branch or to bear fruit is his name. I find that intriguing. But what, from the natural mind, go down into the camp with your friend. They have spears, I know that. You know, there's a bunch of them, I know that. What if I sneak down to the camp and I get caught? Is there part of your plan here? I don't know. Maybe you don't even have 300 in mind. Maybe you just have 2 in mind, which that is a Bible story, by the way. There's a story where God sends 2 into the camp. Okay, and does it. All right. And so he goes into the camp, and it says this down in verse 11. So he went down with Purah, that's his servant, to the outpost of the armed men. Here's why. It's night. You got the guys that are sleeping, and if you ever seen in the movies, you know, with all their spears stacked in the middle, you know, in the inner tents, and then bad guys attack, they all run out and grab their... But instead, God sends him down to where the armed post is, the guard station. Checkpoint Charlie, those of us who know what that is. All right? That's the kind of thing. And so they sneak up close enough where Gideon can hear the conversation. That's pretty close. You know? Unless you're on a lake. You ever been on a lake and sound carries? But there's no sign here. They're just out there. And that's where we see where Gideon observes that they're beyond the count, that they're like the locust. Okay? So he hears these two men talking. And these two guys are talking to each other. They call them comrades. I think that's important because of what it says later. But they hear the two men walking. And one guy says, man, you wouldn't believe this dream I had. I had the freakiest dream. I had this dream. There was this giant cake of barley, okay? Piece of food, piece of bread, all right? And it tumbled down the hill, hit my tent, and my tent collapsed. Now, I'm guy number 2. You got to stop eating pizza with anchovies. But listen to what the guy says, okay? The guy tells me, man, this could only mean one thing. Really? What meaning is that? I don't know about you, because I wouldn't have got much out of that. And I want to basically read it to you. There is no one other than the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel. God has given into his hand Midian and all the camp. You got that out of that dream? I'm Gideon. Here's what I'm asking. How do they know my name? Bigger yet, they know my dad's name. Okay? Now, I being the natural, you know, in the natural, oh, maybe that's why. Because we try to figure out God. We do that. Maybe that's why God got, there was a spy in the camp, so he wanted to get rid of all those guys. So, I, you know. No, because what Gideon does then is it says, and he hears it and worships. I would imagine it was a quiet worship. Okay, because he recognizes this. The only way this guy sees that dream that way and knows Gideon's name, if God told him. I don't know about you, though. For me, I don't know if I consider it a good thing when God gives my military secrets away to somebody else. How do they know Gideon? Wait a minute. Because they always shoot the general first, right? They always make the other guys run. I'm the target now, God, because you told them I'm the... No, he worships God in understanding. This gives him the courage to do what God has called him to do. And so he goes back to camp, gives everybody, as you saw, a torch, a clay pot, all right, and a shofar. That's what that would be. A ram's horn would be called a shofar. All right. I don't know how to blow one. Otherwise, I'd have brought one and blown one, but I don't know how to do that. Okay. And so he gives them all these shofar and breaks them up into 3 groups of 100. Now, again, I'm facing 135,000. 130,000. Let's go 120. I don't know if splitting up my forces is the best thing in that sense. And he tells them this. Look at me and do likewise. It's just amazing to watch this journey from a guy that's hiding in a wine press that just maybe an hour or two before God said, you're afraid. Now look at me and follow me. That is a scary thing to say. Look at your youngins, your kids, excuse me, your children, and it's scary to think they're going to follow you. It's scary to think when you look at them, you go, oh man, that's me all over. That's a smart aleck cheeky thing he does back to his mama. Yeah, he got that from you, Dad, you know, kind of thing. That's a scary thing to say. I'll tell you what, be a Christian like me. Who else said that? Apostle Paul. Follow me as I follow Christ. Could you say it? Look at me and do what I do. I want you to leave church today, follow me home, hang out with me all week, and be a Christian like I'm a Christian. Long as there's no traffic, I guess. Look at me and do as I do. And so they go break up around the camp. And again, you saw the video. Listen to this, though. Here's what I want. It almost sounds egotistical. Here's what I want you to yell when you break the pot. For the Lord and for Gideon. Whoa, dude. You taking credit for what God did? No, remember what the guy said. He's, by having them say that, when you're in the crowd of the Midianites, you hear them yell what you all been rumored. Because by the time that guy had to dream, you know that rumor went around camp. You know what I'm saying? No. He knew what they had said. So he's using, if you will, their own words against them. Saying, make sure you say it like this. Why? Because that's how I heard it. And so as we see, they get confused and this noise. And I actually went online and there was, I'm trying to remember where it was, but some, you know, Christian group had a bunch of guys with shofars, about 300 of them blowing horns. And that's pretty amazing, the loud in itself. And we just think of a blow and on a horn, but how many of you remember Phil Driscoll? Anybody remember besides me? Okay, so we're just getting old. The old people nod. You ought to see that guy play a shofar. I mean, he could play regular music on one. Now, he's extremely talented. But anyway, so you got 300 of these things. And again, you have this idea of dark. It's dark. All of a sudden, you take the pots off. Now there's light. It seems like the enemy has appeared from nowhere. Okay. And people attribute the sound of 300 pots breaking. Maybe. Maybe that, you know, you don't know what that's from. So that could create fear. But, I don't put it in the actions of throwing the pot down, holding up, or other horns. I see it as that miracle of God. God acts and creates the fear in the guy. God wouldn't create fear, would he? For these guys, as they attack one another. But I wanted to take the time to break apart a little bit why the light with the clay pots, why the shofars, the trumpets. Let me see if you would turn to 2 Corinthians 4. You'll know this. Maybe you don't have to turn there because you've probably read this before. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 6 through 7. For it is God who said, let the light shine out of darkness. He is shown in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. But we have this treasure, what treasure? That light, in earthen vessels. Let me put another word, clay pots. That the excellency of the power may be to God and not to us. Isn't that what God's doing in Gideon anyway? I got to make sure that all the glory goes to God, not to you. But there's these clay pots that the light is contained in. And let me tell you this, the light won't shine until the pot's broke. And you've heard me say this, man. God doesn't use you till you're broke. And I don't mean financially. Pick a guy in the Bible. Moses was next in line to Pharaoh. Sorry, that don't work. You haven't been broken yet. Every time, I mean, God sets up every guy. You've got to break down the flesh so the trust is in God. That's what this story is about, is Gideon getting to the fact that it's all got to be God. But then I run into the whole shofar thing. No, it's important. It is they blow trumpets, plural, not trumpet. People try to say this is typology of somehow of Revelation. No, those are seven trumpets, not a trumpet. So our seven individual trumpets, I know I'm saying it plural, but there's trumpet one, trumpet two, trumpet three. They're not blowing all at once. That's my point, okay? And you'll see in Scripture where trumpet is blown singularly, and then trumpets are blown in a unified whole. As you look at that, in Scripture, it was in some way to rally the people together to unite for some reason, okay? So we see it for war. It's blown not just in this story, but Joshua and Numbers shows us where they blow the shofars at once, many, and the people come together for war. But we also see that's the case for worship. They would blow these trumpets in unison to gather the people and together in unity so that they might worship. The Midianites thought they were fighting one army that was attacking in unison. How many of you have watched the Kung Fu movie? I've never understood why all the guys come around and attack that one guy one at a time. Or a sword fight, right? There's 27 guys around, and the sword fight guy's fighting this guy, and they all watch, and once that guy's killed, then he turns, why don't y'all just attack at once? Doesn't that make more sense? To me, it does. But we know then the guy would be killed, and the hero in the movie would be over. But we know that when they're all attacking here at once, that's the idea that is afraid of them. I want you now to turn to John chapter 17. All right, I'm not going to read the whole thing. We're just going to break it down a little bit. This is what's called the high priestly prayer. This is where Jesus is praying. Who's praying? Okay, just checking. All right, so when we get to verse 11, it says, keep them, this is Jesus praying to the Father, keep them in your name, which you have given me so that. What's the reason for keeping them? That they may be one as we are one.
This is Pastor Randy Reams of Kindred Bible Church in Nampa, Idaho. I want to thank you for joining us today for Truths from God's Unchanging Word. This broadcast is an outreach ministry of Kindred Bible Church. I'd like to invite you also to visit our website, kindredbible.org. There you can listen to today's broadcast as well as previous broadcast. If you're being ministered to by the broadcast, I'd like to encourage you to let us know. You can email us at info@kindredbible.org, or you can write to us at Kindred Bible Church, P.O. Box 32, Nampa, Idaho, 83653. And I'd like you also to check us out on Facebook. Look at us over there and give us a like. So again, I want to thank you for listening to Truths from God's Unchanging Word.